Men screw up. It happens. Happens far too often. No, what made me absolutely sick was the attitude of the men on the force. His wife was a gimp. She couldn't satisfy his needs. He punctuated the words in the air. That made his affair acceptable. Acceptable. He shook his white head in clear disbelief. That's why he said he didn't get home until 7 that next morning to find them missing. He was with that hussy next door.
Holly Rupert. Her name was in the file. Farrell's eyes rolled.
Yeah. What kind of woman could sleep with a man not 50 feet from his wife? But she backed up his alibi.
He snorted his derision.
Like she'd lie. Like she wanted the imprint of his fist on her face, too.
Stephen raised his brows. He hit the floozy, too? Farrell shrugged.
Why not?
Miss Rupert never admitted it. Farrell snorted.
Like she would.
Stephen pushed forward. What about Robbie? Did he ever show up to school with bruises?
I never found a teacher who'd seen any, but they described him as a big-eyed, withdrawn little boy who never played with the others. Smart as a whip, though. Mary Grace never let that boy miss school. He always showed up clean and well-kept. Never a spot on his clothes when he got to school, and never a spot when he got back on the bus.
Afraid to get his clothes dirty?
That was my take. There was a student teacher who thought he needed the counselor's care. She'd seen big bruises on Robbie's back.
Farrell frowned.
She told me this when the boy and his mother first disappeared, but changed her story when I visited her again a few weeks later.
You think Winters threatened her?
She denied it.
Farrell shrugged again.
The head nurse at the hospital didn't like Winters. Nancy Desmond cared for Mary Grace through her entire 3 months at General. She was very willing to testify to her opinions, but he was never charged.
I'll go talk with her.
Can't. She ran her car off the road about 6 months after Mary Grace disappeared. Died.
Well, that's a shame.
She gave me the pictures.
Farrell nodded briskly at Stephen's briefcase.
Told me she'd suggested safe houses to Mary Grace. Gave her names, addresses. But she said that Mary Grace just stared at her with those big blue eyes and never said a word.
Is it possible Mary Grace ran away with a boy?
I suppose anything's possible. But after that last fall, I don't think she could lift an empty coffee cup, much less escape an abusive husband.
Farrell smiled, a gleam lighting his sharp eyes.
What have you planned next, detective?
To check into Mary Grace's movements at the time of her disappearance and Winters' alibi. Farrell nodded, pleased.
And then?
And then I'll check all the women's clinics within an hour or two drive to see if I can find one that can identify Mary Grace as a patient. I want to establish that there was other abuse, continual and significant. I also want to establish he had opportunity to kill his wife and pitch her car in Douglas Lake.
Check over the border in Tennessee for women's clinics, Farrell advised. It was going to be my next step.
What happened? Why'd you close the case?
I was overruled. Dixon, the lieutenant before Ross, believed Winters. Hell, there were days I almost believed Winters. He was either a grieving husband and father, or the best actor I've ever seen.
He sighed.
Then I had to retire shortly thereafter. Anyway, Dix closed the case after a few months. Time went on, and most people simply forgot.
You didn't, Stephen said softly. Farrell turned his hard gaze full on Stephen's face.
No, I never forgot any of them, especially the missing children. I can still see the face of every missing child I ever investigated. You have any kids, Thatcher?
Yes. Stephen closed his eyes and saw their faces. 3 boys, 6, 13, and 16.
And you'd gladly lay down your life for them,
in a heartbeat.
Charlene and I lost our first child when she was a baby. They called it crib death then. We had others after that, but never forgot the one we lost. I always considered it something of a personal insult when bastards abused children.
That I can understand. Stephen checked his watch. I need to be going. I want to check out the car they pulled up in Sevier County.
Stephen stood and walked to the door, turning when Farrell called his name.
Yes?
I'm surprised you didn't ask about the restraining order.
Stephen stopped in his tracks, turned, walked back, and took his seat once again. He cleared his throat.
Restraining order?
Yes. Mary Grace took out a restraining order the day before she, fell down the stairs.
That wasn't in the file, Stephen muttered.
Farrell raised his white brows.
Interesting.
Tell me what happened, Stephen demanded.
Mary Grace visited a young legal aid attorney, took out a restraining order on Rob the day before she fell down the stairs 9 years ago. It was never filed. The legal aid attorney took it to the judge on a Wednesday afternoon. The judge took it under advisement. And early Thursday morning, little Robbie calls 911 because his mother's unconscious with a pinched spinal cord laying in a congealed pool of her own blood at the bottom of the cellar stairs.
Stephen shook his head in disbelief. And nobody thought this was the least bit irregular?
I did. But Rob Winters had painted his wife as depressed and melancholy for years. She'd lost a baby a few years before, and he said she'd never been the same. Hinted that she drank sometimes. There was alcohol in the house, but never any indication of any in her system. The doctor said she'd been lying on the cellar floor too long to conclusively say whether she had or hadn't been drinking.
Farrell shrugged.
Again, you'd have had to see him then. He was devastated over her injury. Visited her in the hospital every day.
Who was the legal aide?
Young man named Smith.
Farrell grimaced.
John Smith, believe it or not. Go try to find him if you're into self-abuse. He skipped town.
Convenient, Stephen said dryly. And the judge?
The judge wanted to get more information before he signed the order. Then when she took her fall, there was no evidence Rob had been anywhere near her, and Mary Grace had fallen before.
Winters was on duty?
Yes, but the restraining order and her fall happened about 2 years before she disappeared. No one questioned his alibi for that night later.
I will, Stephen muttered.
Good.
Farrell waited until Stephen was at the doorway before calling him again.
Thatcher?
Yes, Stephen asked.
Put the bugger away for a long time.
Sevier County, Tennessee, Wednesday, March 7th, 3:30 p.m. Stephen handled the cracked pottery statue as if it were a Ming vase. The statue had not been listed in the original report. Mechanic Russell Vandalia explaining that he'd found it later when cleaning the silt from the floorboards. Vandalia stood close by, spitting in a coffee can. Stephen was sure the man considered himself discreet. Deputy Tyler McCoy stood next to Vandalia, a look of general distrust on his face.
"She looks like the Virgin Mary," Vandalia offered, "but that's not the name on the plaque."
Stephen turned the statue over and squinted. "Saint Rita of Cascia," he read.
"Who's she?" McCoy asked. "I'm not Catholic."
"Saint Rita is a patron saint of impossible causes," Stephen answered. "It was the name of the parochial high school for the girls in my hometown," he added, his tone wry. He was Catholic. He had, in fact, been an altar boy, and once even seriously considered becoming a priest. Of course, that was before Melissa Peterson, St. Rita's most popular senior, showed him what he'd be missing in the back of his father's brand-new Olds Cutlass. He'd said 5 Hail Marys after confessing that one a month later. He'd said, "I do," 2 months after that. He couldn't, wouldn't regret it. His oldest son, Brad, was one of the three joys of his life. Matt and Nicky were the other two. Fishing came in at a distant fourth.
I wonder why it was in her car, McCoy said thoughtfully, jerking Stephen back from his mental wandering.
He'd wondered the same thing. It was overtly out of place.
Ask Detective Winters. He seemed to find it especially important, Vandalia commented quietly.
Stephen whipped his head to stare at Vandalia, almost bobbling the statue, catching it against his chest.
Winters has been here? He asked sharply.
Yes, sir. Monday afternoon. He stared at that statue a long time. It seemed to agitate him.
Stephen took a deep breath and put the statue back on a little table next to the car.
You pulled up the car, Deputy McCoy?
McCoy nodded.
Yes, I did. We were dragging the lake for a victim of a jet ski wreck and pulled it up by accident.
Where was it located? What part of the lake? Stephen had moved to a large area wall map. McCoy moved to his side and pointed to the southwest corner of the lake.
Right about here. 7 years ago, this area was undeveloped. Hikers used it for camping, but overall it was pretty deserted. The car was about 150 feet from the shore.
It wasn't rolled in, Stephen mused. It's too far out for that. He frowned, visualizing. Depress the accelerator, get the motor revving, then let her fly.
Is that statue heavy enough to hold down the accelerator?
That's what I thought, Vandalia offered, just as quietly as before. Her abductor had some kind of religious fixation, McCoy thought out loud.
Perhaps, said Stephen. But I'd like to know why Winters was upset by seeing it.
He took one last look at the statue of St. Rita on the table.
I think it's time Detective Winters and I have a chat. Chicago, Wednesday, March 7th, 5 p.m.
You're awfully quiet,
Dana observed, munching on buttered popcorn, watching Caroline stare at the basketball court, her expression distant. Tom had missed two on the rebound, and Caroline hadn't even noticed.
What gifts?
Caroline blinked and glanced over from the corner of her eye.
Just thinking. Then we're in deep shit. Oops.
Dana covered her mouth and looked around to see if any of the surrounding teens had heard her swear.
Don't worry about it,
Caroline advised, waving to Tom, who wore a scowl.
They've got you beat 10 ways to Sunday. These kids know words I never heard in 7 years of living with a...
She stopped abruptly, pursed her lips, and clenched her eyes shut.
Oh, my God.
In 7 years of living with a cop. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what Caroline had pulled back just in time. What was surprising was that she'd slipped at all. Caroline never slipped. Out of all the women Dana had ever welcomed to Hanover House, Caroline Stewart was the most determined to make her new life work. She'd taken every necessary precaution, and, quite honestly, more than a few Dana thought were unnecessary. The hair color Caroline chose 7 years ago was still a major bone of contention between them. But Caroline's way worked, mostly. After 7 years, Caroline and Tom still lived in relative freedom. It wouldn't be true freedom until Caroline stopped jumping every time somebody came up behind her, until she was comfortable in her own skin, until she had a life of her own, until Tom stopped carrying the burden of protecting his mother from a nightmare. Caroline would say relative freedom was enough. Dana disagreed, but had learned a long time ago that arguing with Caroline was largely a waste of breath. Dana tended to waste an awful lot of breath. Caroline sat on the bleacher, her hand over her mouth, looking as guilty as if she'd just propositioned the Pope.
What's wrong with me?
She whispered.
I never slip. Never.
Dana shrugged.
Maybe it's because you're finally starting to feel safe.
Caroline said nothing. She simply sat on the bleacher and stared at the hardwood court.
I'm glad I woke up in time to meet Max last night,
Dana mused.
Otherwise, I would have had to rely on Mrs. Pulaski's description, although she was pretty accurate. She told me Max Hunter was the sexiest thing she'd seen in 25 years. And he'd had kind eyes,
Dana remembered with relief. After almost 10 years in this business, she'd learned to trust her intuition. She could generally tell the perps, the violent ones, the ones that made her clients' lives a living hell. Max Hunter had kindness in him. Dana wanted that kind of man for Caroline more than anything. Caroline looked over from the corner of her eye.
He asked me to go to dinner with him tonight.
Dana pursed her lips.
2 nights running. Interesting. You, of course, turned him down because you never missed Tom's games.
Caroline drew her brows together.
And just what is that supposed to mean?
Dana let the smirk bend her lips, knowing how to yank Caroline's chain just right.
Just that you wouldn't refuse because you're getting scared. You'd have to have a good reason. Shut up, Dana.
Dana chuckled again and threw another handful of popcorn in her mouth.
Did he ask you out for tomorrow night when you turned him down for tonight? Yes. And you said? Yes.
Her best friend's glum monosyllabic response stirred sympathy deep down. Dana kept it deep down. Caroline didn't need coddling.
And now you're thinking, oh my God, what am I doing?
Caroline sighed.
Yes. Articulate when our guts are tied up in knots, aren't we?
Caroline glared.
Shut up, Dana.
Dana lifted a brow.
I rest my case. Caroline, did you have a good time with Max? Yes.
Her lower lip trembled and she bit it.
It was one of the nicest evenings I've ever had.
Dana shoved the sympathy down deep again. So many times she had to resist the urge to put her arms around the women in her care. Sometimes it was appropriate. Most of the time she couldn't indulge herself in the touchy-feely stuff. Most of the time her clients needed a shove, gentle but resolute. But Caroline wasn't a client. The woman biting her lip was her very best friend. Dana shoved her own feelings aside and shrugged nonchalantly.
Then go out with him again,
she tossed out, as if it made no difference either way.
Worst that could happen is you get a free dinner and enjoy the view across the table.
Caroline frowned.
What a terrible thing to say,
she snapped. Then her eyes softened, registering understanding at what had been a rather transparent ploy. She blew out an enormous sigh, turning back to the court.
His brother fixed my car.
Dana jerked her eyes from the court to Caroline's pensive profile.
What? His brother David, you know, the one who...
Dana grinned.
The one who put Shawclaw in her place? I like him already.
Caroline sucked in her cheeks, fighting her own grin, then gave up and let the smile take over her face.
It was a sight to behold,
she chuckled.
Anyway, I'd mentioned yesterday that my starter was busted, and today after work, David showed up with my keys. He said he had my car towed to his shop where he just happened to have a rebuilt starter and it was really no trouble. So what did you do?
Caroline shrugged uneasily.
I was able to convince him to let me pay for the starter. He wouldn't take anything for the labor. So I said thank you and took my keys. He seemed so happy to be able to help, and I did need my car fixed.
She worried at her lower lip with her teeth.
What else could I have done? Depends. Does he look like Max?
Caroline narrowed her eyes.
Yes. Then the least you could have done was mention you had a friend in dire need of a tune-up. And would I have meant you or your car?
Caroline asked dryly. Dana grinned.
Either. Both. I'm very flexible.
And ducked the popcorn Caroline threw at her head. Asheville, Wednesday, March 7th, 7 p.m. It had started to rain, a light, cold spring rain, gently pattering against the roof of Stevens' parked rental car as it sat in Winters' otherwise empty driveway. The interior of the car was silent except for the rhythmic swish of the windshield wipers.
"Now what?" Stephen wondered aloud, his voice harsh in the muted quiet.
He hunched down in the driver's seat and pinched the bridge of his nose. A major headache was coming on. Sue Ann Broughton had been terrified. He'd seen it in her eyes. He'd also seen the faded bruises on her face and neck. They were probably 3 or 4 days old, which meant they'd been put on her face right about the time Winters found out about his wife and son. He hated domestic abuse cases. Stephen pinched the bridge of his nose harder, especially when a cop was involved. Shaken off his mood, Stephen pulled his cell phone from his pocket and punched in Ross's direct office line. "Lieutenant, did Winters mention any plans to take a vacation?"
"No,"
Ross replied carefully.
"Just that he was taking some leave to pull himself together after Sevier County pulled up his wife's car."
"Did you tell him not to leave town?"
"Yes."
She paused, then asked heavily,
"Why?"
Stephen stared at Winters's house, empty but for his battered girlfriend. "Because he's gone." Chicago, Wednesday, March 7th, 8:30 p.m.
"I thought boys weren't supposed to take as long with their toilette as girls,"
Dana grumbled.
"They do when they know the girls will be watching,"
Caroline returned, throwing a pointed glance across the school's lobby, where a group of teenage girls waited for the basketball team to emerge from the locker area.
"Anyway, here he comes. We can go now."
Tom broke away from the group, hanging behind for a last word with his coach. Her son's face was not happy.
"What are they talking about?"
Dana whispered.
"Tom's game was off tonight,"
Caroline murmured back.
"He missed a couple of easy free throws and fouled twice. But Frank's a good coach. He never yells at the boys. If he did, I'd be over there in his face myself."
For which, of course, she'd need a ladder.
"He's probably just telling Tom to mind his concentration and to stop paying attention to the cheerleaders."
Dana frowned.
"That's never seemed to distract him before. What else is bothering him?"
Caroline watched Tom nod, his head down, her own heart troubled.
"He was quiet at breakfast this morning. I think he's a little thrown by Max." "I thought he might be,"
Dana said.
"It would be abnormal if he weren't. But it will pass, right? Life goes on, Carol. Tommy boy's just gonna have to accept that his mom is now a hunk magnet."
"Ow," she added when Caroline punched her arm.
"Shut up, Dana."
She tilted her head when Tom approached.
"Hard night out there, huh?"
Tom nodded grimly.
"Yeah."
And turned for the front doors without another word.
"Using little words when you're upset seems to run in the family,"
Dana muttered under her breath, following.
"Shut up, Dana."
Caroline hurried after Tom, Dana in tow.
"What did Frank say, Tom?"
"Nothing."
Tom deliberately lengthened his stride, dismissing her. Caroline rolled her eyes.
"Suit yourself." "Not that way, Tom."
She gestured to the right when he turned left towards the bus stop.
"We're going to the parking lot."
Tom looked over at Dana, then shrugged.
"Whatever."
The three walked in silence until they reached Caroline's very old Toyota. Tom came to an abrupt halt.
"What is this?"
he demanded, glaring over his shoulder. Caroline pursed her lips.
"My car."
She unlocked the driver's door and flipped the unlock switch.
"Get in."
She eyed him over the roof of the car.
"Please."
He climbed in the back, barely waiting until she and Dana had fastened their seat belts before exploding.
How did you fix it? I thought we didn't have enough money for me to go to basketball camp because we were saving to fix this piece of junk.
He aimed an angry punch to the tattered upholstery, then threw himself back into the seat, his arms tightly crossed over his chest.
Uh-oh,
Dana muttered, then winced when Caroline narrowed her eyes.
Shutting up.
Caroline drew a controlled breath and slowly released it. Tom rarely got angry. So rarely, she had no real practice in dealing with it.
Tom, I'm very sorry you had a bad game. I know it doesn't happen often enough for you to get practice controlling your, disappointment. Not bad, she thought to herself. Not bad at all. That doesn't, however, give you an excuse to be surly, so stop it,
she added sharply.
We'll talk about this after we've dropped Dana off.
Tom straightened in the back seat.
How did you get the money to get the car fixed?
He asked suspiciously, ignoring her direct order to drop the subject. Caroline sighed and pulled out of the parking place.
Max's brother David fixed it for me.
A beat of silence hovered.
How very nice of him,
Tom said coldly. Caroline looked into the rearview mirror in surprise. He'd turned away, now staring out the window, but she could see enough of his profile in the strobe flash of the streetlights to make her blood run cold.
What's that supposed to mean? Nothing.
Temper simmered at his tone and the thought he'd left deliberately unsaid.
No. No. You spit out something like that, you follow it up, young man. What is that supposed to mean? Caroline?
Dana murmured. Caroline gripped the steering wheel, her hands shaking. She hated confrontations like this. They made her nauseous. But Tom was her son. Whatever he was feeling needed to be dealt with. He also needed to learn he couldn't get away with disrespect, whatever its source.
If he's old enough to start down this path, he's old enough to explain himself, Dana. Tom, explain. Why did Max's brother fix your car?
He asked acidly.
Because he's a nice man. I had dinner with Max and his brother last night, and I mentioned my starter was broken. In conversation,
she added meaningfully.
David was trying to help. Just like that? Yes,
Caroline answered, exasperated.
Just like that. Tom, there are nice people in the world who do nice things without expecting anything in return. Can you understand that?
Tom said nothing for a moment. Then,
yeah, I understand.
Caroline bit the inside of her cheek. The remainder of the ride to Dana's apartment was completed in tense silence. Dana patted her shoulder as she unbuckled her seatbelt.
He's only 14, Caroline,
she murmured.
Going on 40,
Caroline thought, making an attempt at a smile.
Night, Dana.
Dana glanced into the back seat uneasily before slamming the car door. Caroline had driven 5 minutes before quieting her heart enough to calmly speak.
Tom, you and I have been through a lot over the years, and I've always been honest with you. You need to give me the same respect.
She stopped at a red light and looked into the rearview mirror. He was still staring out the window.
Tom, I like Max.
She watched his jaw tense.
I like him a lot. And I'll be honest with you now. This is new for me. I'm not sure what's going to happen next. But I do know I feel happy when I'm with him. If you let yourself, I think you'll like him too.
Tom didn't budge a muscle, and then the light turned green. Shaking her head, Caroline put the car in motion. Another 5 minutes passed before Tom spoke.
People might do nice things for no reason at all. Men don't.
Caroline felt her heart sink.
Oh, baby,
she thought, fighting the urge to cry, wishing to heaven her son didn't believe that was true.
Tom, I...
Tom's body moved, then, so quickly she was startled. He came forward, gripping her headrest, giving it a hard shake in his hands.
I can't believe you don't see it, Mom. I can't believe you're so damn naive.
Caroline stared straight ahead, her hands gripping the wheel so hard her knuckles throbbed. She drew a breath, trying to ignore the sharp stab of pain in her heart. Naive? Maybe so. But it was far better to be naive than bitter, although she must have become bitter somewhere along the way. Where else could her son have learned that tone? Her budding relationship with Max took on even greater significance.
I'm having dinner with him tomorrow, Tom,
she said quietly, firmly.
Mom!
He cried, then released her headrest and sunk back against his seat, his face taut. They'd arrived in front of their apartment, and she slid her car into an open slot, grateful to find one so close to the building. The neighborhood was rough after dark. One day she'd be able to afford better. One day her son would see that people, that men, could be kind. She turned to face his angry eyes.
I know you're upset because you love me. I'm asking you to love me enough to trust me, Tom.
Tom shook his head.
It's not you I don't trust, he muttered, bolting from the car and up the landing into their building, not looking back.
Chapter 9. Chicago, Thursday, March 8th, 6:45 p.m. Caroline was tense today, had been since she'd brought him his morning coffee. It emanated from her in waves so powerful they were almost tangible. But she'd insisted nothing was wrong. He'd had a meeting run late with the dean after classes and wasn't sure she'd even be waiting for their dinner date when he got back. But she was. She was tense and preoccupied, but she was there waiting for him, and Max considered that a good sign. So now they walked together, side by side, out of Carrington's history building and towards his car. But she was miles away. Something had changed. Max just wished he knew what. He'd already racked his brain, wondering what he possibly could have done to precipitate her current mood, and determined he'd done nothing. He shivered and pulled his coat lapels closer with his free hand. He'd forgotten how cold Chicago spring freezes could be. Caroline was freezing, too, her teeth chattering. Her coat was thin, and thinking of her broken-down car and her apartment in the poorer section of town, he wondered if she couldn't afford anything better. Again, a feeling of protectiveness welled from somewhere deep inside. But it was no longer unfamiliar. So intent was he on Caroline, he completely missed seeing the patch of ice. His feet lost purchase with the pavement, and...
Ugh!
The grunt was accompanied by a solid thud as he hit the pavement. The grunt came from his throat. The thud came from his head. For a moment the world went black. Then Max opened his eyes and saw stars. Luckily they were in the sky, right where they were supposed to be. He wagged one foot experimentally, then the other, sighing with relief when both feet responded normally. He pushed himself up on his elbows, still blinking when Caroline appeared at his side. She dropped to her knees and went to work checking for broken bones.
What happened?
I was practicing my gymnastics, Max responded dryly. That was my triple Lutz. Caroline looked up from examining his knees with a wry grin.
That's figure skating.
So I had a little trouble on the dismount.
Max shrunk back from her hands when she hit a sore spot just above his knee. Just making sure you were paying attention.
Trust me, I was,
she murmured. Oh, really? He asked, his deep voice going even deeper. Caroline met his gaze head-on and nodded silently before dropping her eyes to his ankles to continue her cursory check for broken bones. She had been paying attention all afternoon. She'd listened for every thump of his cane as he paced the length of his office, every rumble of his voice through the wall when he answered the phone. She'd alternate between wincing over Tom's explosion the night before to reliving the wonderful evening of shared laughter with Max. Just as real were the memories of the shimmering sensation she felt at that tiny little caress of his thumb across her lip. That tiny little caress that rocked her to her toes, sent shivers down her spine, left her tingling long after. That tiny little peck on her lips that, God help her, left her wanting a whole lot more than dinner. She now sat back on her heels and looked at his face. He'd been watching her thoughtfully as she checked him for obvious injuries. The warmth in her cheeks now radiated through her whole body.
You should get this knee checked out, Max. Are you hurt anywhere else?
I don't think so. Maybe just my pride. He winced. And my tailbone. Shit. She watched as he struggled to stand, then fell back again with a muffled curse.
Let me help you get up.
You can't, huh? I'd pull you down with me. He lifted an eyebrow, and she could see the gleam in his eyes even in the darkness. Now that's a thought. His teasing did the trick, soothing her nerves and restoring the easy camaraderie they'd shared over dinner with his zany brother. Chuckling, she braced herself on her heels, crossing her arms across her chest.
Nice try, Max. Next you'll be telling me your car is out of gas. Here, hold on.
He viewed her with new confidence, gripped her forearms, and together they eased him to his feet. You've worked in a hospital.
No, but I've spent enough time in them.
She tried to bite back the words, but it was too late. The hospital was something she never discussed with anyone. Not even Dana knew all the details of her injury and recovery. Burying the most painful memories deep was the only thing that seemed to keep her going, especially when she'd first escaped. It appeared some of those memories were breaking loose and bubbling up. Maybe Dana was right. Maybe she was starting to feel safe. Then again, maybe she was just naive, like Tom had accused. The thoughts still stung. To change the subject, she looked away.
Here's your cane. Let me walk a step ahead in case there's more ice.
He clenched his teeth and took a few steps. I thought the woman was supposed to walk 6 paces behind.
Ah, the pitfalls of our field. Get out of the past, Professor, and into the 21st century.
Hearing him merely grunt in reply, she looked over her shoulder to find him leaning on a light pole, his face contorted with pain.
Or should I say cut the macho act and let me take you to a hospital?
No hospitals. I hate the damn things. Remembering how she'd also hated them, she relented.
Okay. Then let me drive you home.
No, we're going to dinner, even if it kills me. He took another step, then grimaced. And it just might. Caroline shook her head. He didn't need dinner. He needed an orthopedic surgeon. But she wouldn't press the issue. There would be other dinners, she thought, quelling her disappointment.
Let me take you home, Max.
He gritted his teeth and leaned on his cane. No, we are going to dinner. Caroline rolled her eyes. The man's head was thick, which was fortunate as his head took the brunt of his fall.
Tell you what, I'll take you home, throw something together, and we can still have dinner. What's wrong now?
She asked, exasperated when he didn't move. This wasn't what I'd planned. Caroline sighed, her breath instantly turning to vapor, momentarily blocking him from view.
Plans change, Max. Either I take you home or I take you to a doctor. Your choice.
You're a bossy woman. But he eased his foot forward, still leaning heavily on the cane.
So I'm told, by sources more experienced than you. I'm also a good cook.
Then home it is. His house was old-fashioned, white with gingerbread-type latticework in the eaves. A front porch wrapped across the front and around the side, where a classic porch swing moved in the night wind. She could see a tire swing hanging from one of the massive trees in the front yard. A light was burning at the front door, but there was no evidence of anyone else around for miles.
"Nice place,"
she said. It was. It was the kind of house she'd always known existed, always known normal people lived in, loved each other in, where mothers rocked their children to sleep at night and husbands said, "I love you," and murmured endearments for no reason at all, and didn't drink themselves into abusive rages. Caroline put Max's car in park and sat staring at the front porch, almost hearing the happy cries of children, almost seeing flowers blooming in the neglected beds lining the porch. The house drew her. Or maybe it was the illusion of normalcy that exerted the magnetic pull. Either way, she was setting herself up for an enormous fall. The man, the house, the fantasy of it all. Max studied her profile in the soft light of his grandmother's front porch. She was staring at his house with an expression so wistful, so sad, it twisted his heart. "I'm glad you like it. Let's go in." His driveway was blissfully empty. "No Dave, no Ma," he thought with relief as he fished for his house key and opened the door for Caroline. "Alone," he thought in the darkness of his foyer. "Finally." Caroline blinked when he flipped the switch, flooding the foyer with bright light. "Sorry, my grandmother had bad eyes at the end, so all the lights in the house are this bright." He tugged at his gloves, shoved them in the pocket of his overcoat, watched her turn, and in her quiet way, take it all in. Recognized how important her reaction would be.
"It's nice, Max."
She crossed to the far corner, heavy with shadows and dust, and trailed her finger along a vertical line of smudges on the wall.
"Aw, look, how sweet. Which one is yours?"
Max felt the warmth fill his chest at the memory of Grandma Hunter's growth chart, and at the way Caroline's face had softened as she spied it. That her eyes had snapped to it almost immediately, despite the corner location, didn't surprise him in the least. She hadn't looked at the dingy paint or loud wallpaper, but at the signs of home and love. He took the few steps to join her, and reaching over her shoulder, inhaled her scent before pointing to one of the tallest marks. "That one. That was on my 13th birthday." Caroline's head tilted back to see where he pointed.
"About the same size my Tom is now."
"And where did Tom get that height, Caroline?" Max wanted to ask. But he didn't, because she didn't offer, and because he wasn't sure he really wanted to know the answer. "Yes. I remember the day like it was yesterday." The back of her head nearly brushed his shoulder as she looked up, and it would only take the tiniest of movements to bring it into contact with his body. His minute shuffle forward was plenty enough to accomplish the task. She tensed, but didn't pull away. He took that as tacit agreement to continue.
"And?"
"Oh, yeah, 13th birthday." His mind had flown from sweet memories in the past to the sweet fragrance she wore in the very real present. He shuddered out the breath he hadn't realized he was holding. "I was 13, and all I wanted was a dirt bike. My older brother had one, and I'd coveted it from the day he turned 13. I suspected Pop would get it for me, but I wasn't really sure. Ma had fought him tooth and nail when he bought Peter's."
"Peter would be your older brother?"
"Uh-huh. He's 5 years older and twin to my sister Catherine."
"Peter and Catherine the Great, huh?"
Max nodded, using the motion to brush his cheek against her temple, feeling the slight tug of her hair against his evening stubble. He could hear the amusement in her voice. "You're quick. My dad was a history buff. Anyway, he..."
"Was?"
Caroline interrupted, turning to look up at him, sadness in her eyes. Max cleared his throat. "My father died in a car accident 12 years ago. She was quiet for a long moment, just looking at him.
You loved him?
Yes, Max thought, as much as it was possible to love a father. More. But the words couldn't come. His throat had closed shut against the wave of sudden intense memory. Caroline lifted a tentative hand to his cheek, cupping his jaw.
Then you were lucky.
Her gentle touch was a soothing balm, easing back the barrier that went up so automatically. Yeah, I guess I was. She stood there looking up at him, those blue eyes filled with compassion and tenderness. I take it then that you were not. She pulled her hand away.
No.
She forced a smile.
Tell me more about the dirt bike.
So he did. Anything to wipe that wounded expression from her incredible eyes. Ma thought we would break our necks out there, and Pop was of the firm opinion that boys needed an outlet for their energy. So we had the cake and ice cream, and I was practically dancing in my seat. Then Grandma Hunter wanted to mark my height, and I didn't want to. I told her I was too old, and she became so sad. I never could stand to see her sad, so I folded and trotted over here and stood obediently while she drew the line. Then she leaned up and whispered that I'd become a man, that this was the last year she'd be able to mark my height. He swallowed, remembering the sharp sense of loss he'd felt at her words.
Because you showed respect for her feelings.
What?
You were a man because you showed respect for her feelings. A boy wouldn't have done what you did, Max.
The memory became even more poignant. I suppose you're right. I never thought about it that way. I always thought it was the magic of being 13 or growing too tall for her to reach the top of my head.
So you got your dirt bike?
Yep. I ran outside and there it was, all shiny and new. Pop had come through for me. He chuckled. Then Pop drove me to the hospital the next day when I broke my wrist. And Ma never said I told you so.
What a wonderful memory.
His eyes focused on the top of her head, her dark brown hair picking up the bright light of the foyer, and he suddenly wished for the muted shadows of candlelight. Memories of bikes and birthdays and falls on the ice vanished as a slug of lust hit him square, rekindling the state of half-arousal he'd borne all day into a blazing urgency. He wanted her. Why do you always wear your hair up in a braid? Caroline's eyes widened.
It's easier. Max, what?
But he'd already pulled the band from the tail and was working to free the entwined strands. I want to see it down, he said, his voice gone husky, then watched that irresistible blush color her cheeks once again. It seemed like an eternity since he'd touched her. Caroline felt heat surge and unbuttoned the top buttons of the coat she still wore. His palm cradled the back of her head, his fingers gently scraping her scalp as they worked their way into the thickness of her hair, sending it falling to the middle of her back. His other hand freed the buttons on her coat and pushed it from her shoulders, blindly hanging it on a hook behind him. Caroline. With difficulty, she lifted her eyes and saw him staring down at her, his intentions fair and clear. She mustered a faint nod, and then ceased to think at all when his mouth covered hers. His mouth was everything she'd dreamed. Strong and soft, it monopolized, demanded, and gave back everything it took, and more. He nudged, nipped, and feasted, still touching with only the hand on her head and those sensual lips. The heat smoldered deep within her body, then ignited, unleashing a response she'd never known she held at bay. Her hands clutched great handfuls of his overcoat as if it were a lifeline, a tether to anchor her as the storm of new emotions nearly swept her off her feet. She was on the brink of changing her life. But the knowing didn't make the moment any less awesome. She wanted him, wanted his hands on her, wanted to feel his body against her own. In all her life she'd never wanted like this, never believed she was capable of such an insatiable craving. In the 7 years of freedom, she'd never once felt the liquid tug of desire for a man, any man. Not until this man. She felt smooth fabric and hard chest under her hands as they flattened against him, shoving his overcoat aside and running up his chest until they met the warm skin of his neck and clasped there, bringing him closer. Inching up on her toes, she pressed her body upwards, seeking a more complete fit. Max had wondered how it would be, dreamed of how it would be. But it was better than his dreams. It was perfect. She was perfect. Her lips molded exquisitely to his mouth, yielding to the pressure of the kiss, at first returning it in her more reserved manner. He moved her head with his palm to increase the tenor of the kiss by a degree, seeking new angles and finding beauty in each one, losing himself in the sheer feeling of her. Then her hands clutched at him, and her reserved response simply exploded. Knowing his kiss had so affected her was more arousing than any of the smoother moves he'd ever had put on him by more sophisticated women. Feeling her arms lock around his neck release the strangled groan that had been building deep within him for days. But still he managed to hang on to control by a thread. Until her body twisted against him. Restraint evaporated, and his free hand slid down the curve of her back, cupped her round bottom, and lifted her higher. One step brought her shoulders into contact with the wall, and she started in surprise, throwing her hips forward and against his rigid erection. For an electric instant, both Caroline and Max went still, frozen by the blatant carnality of the contact and everything it implied. Max lifted his head to find her eyes open, a mix of unbridled desire and astonished wonder. The desire made him press harder, deeper into the softness of her body. But the wonder made him pull back. This was another first for her, he was certain. He would stop this time. That there would be a next time was a given fact. He released his hold slowly, until her feet again touched the floor, the physical bond between them broken. Wisps of hair framed her face, whipped about by the rapid breaths he exhaled. Her lips were plump and full, her cheeks chafed by his beard. She was beautiful. God. He dropped his head, resting his cheek on the top of her head. His heart was jerking like a jackhammer, his lungs pumping like a bellows. His body was throbbing painfully. He'd never felt so alive. This was good. He knew it intuitively. This was where he was supposed to be. And she was where she was supposed to be. In his arms.
What?
Caroline asked, hearing a voice totally unlike her own. Breathy and sexy. Hard to contemplate. She, Caroline, reborn into a woman who could tear a groan from a man like Max Hunter? Incredible. Reality. The hand she'd locked behind his neck loosened and slid forward to frame his jaws, caressing lightly with her thumbs before dropping to her sides. One of his large hands still tangled her hair, and he used it now to gently tug her head back. His lips brushed over her reddened cheeks, dropping soft, plucking kisses along the curve of her jaw to the sensitive spot behind her ear, just above the collar of her sweater. Another shiver raced down her spine. "I'm sorry," he murmured in her ear. "I scratched your face. Tomorrow I'll shave first." Then he stepped back and shrugged out of his overcoat, watching her face the whole time. Wonder gave way to amazement. He was sorry because he'd scratched her face? Caroline fought the urge to shake her head.
So this is how normal men behave,
she thought. But even as her brain formed the notion, she knew it wasn't true. There was nothing normal about Max Hunter. In small phases, amazement gave way to amusement. Tomorrow? She arched her brows, tilting her head as she watched him hang his coat on a hook next to hers. His eyes never left her face, as if he were watching for any flicker of refusal, and the thought made her heart swell. Considerate and vulnerable in a cocky kind of way. A newfound confidence bloomed.
Promise?
She asked. Promise what?
Promise you'll shave.
A grin warmed his eyes before settling on his mouth, and the effect on his face took her breath away. He was the most incredible-looking man. She tested her tender lip with the tip of her tongue. With the most inventive mouth. He hadn't kissed. He'd devoured and cherished in the same effort. Tomorrow. Mercy. Cross my heart. Loosening his tie, he pointed to the kitchen. And now it's time for dinner. Caroline cracked an egg into the bowl of Max's restaurant-grade mixer. His kitchen tools were something out of Better Homes, even if the decor was classic 60s.
Leave the math assignment on the dining room table. I want to see it with my own eyes. And remember, no camping trip during spring break if your report card has a C in math where a B should be. And Tom? Yeah, Mom.
Caroline shook her head at her son's barely veiled patience, clearly hearing in his voice the strain from the night before. Rarely had they allowed so much time to pass before clearing the air, and now Caroline wasn't sure how to talk to her own child. So she fell back on the familiar. She was his mother, like it or not.
I'm sending Dana over to check on you in about an hour. Do not let anyone else in the apartment. I know, Mom.
A pause and the sound of the refrigerator door opening.
Do not answer the door and do not get into a car with strangers, no matter how delicious their candy,
he finished sarcastically. Caroline sighed.
Am I that bad, honey?
There was a moment of uncomfortable silence, then Tom sighed, too.
No, not really.
He bit into an apple, the sound cracking in her ear.
You're a good mom,
he finished with his mouth full, and just like that, the air was cleared.
And usually responsible,
he added lightly.
But give me the number where you are anyway, and call me before you leave for home.
Caroline complied, hearing the effort he was making.
And I'll be home before a curfew, sir.
See that you do.
He hesitated a beat.
Mom, I'm sorry I got so mad last night, but...
He drew a breath.
But you just met him, and... Mom, are you sure this guy is okay?
Love surged, and with it, a deep sorrow that her son would ever think to ask the question.
Yes, sweetheart, he is. But if it will set your mind at ease, call later.
I will.
Bye, doll. Mom! Sorry.
She deepened her voice, going for serious.
Goodbye, Thomas.
Shaking her head, she replaced the receiver just in time to see Max coming down the stairs, taking them one at a time. He hurt, she knew. She tried to wish he hadn't strained himself kissing her senseless after taking that fall, but couldn't find the selflessness required. Her body still purred, and it had only been a kiss. Yeah, and the Grand Canyon was just a hole in the ground. She shivered, despite the heat of his kitchen, and turned for the stove, giving him relative privacy to limp to the table. You get through okay? She could hear the strain he tried to hide, then saw it in the lines around his eyes when she turned around to face him.
Yes, thanks. Tom will enjoy having the apartment to himself for a few hours. That translates to scarfing down potato chips in the living room, having the remote all to himself, and putting his feet in all the places his size 13 shoes are not supposed to be.
Max remembered Caroline's son and once again wondered where the boy got his height. "And you're sure he's just 14? She threw him a wry glance.
"Fairly certain, as I happened to be there when he was born."
She reached for two bowls of salad and set them down on the table.
"You have exactly 10 different kinds of salad dressing."
Her dimples winked at him.
"David told me about the shopping trip from hell. Your mother must have had coupons for every brand in the store."
"Ranch is fine." He watched in appreciation as she reached high into his pantry, her fluid movements throwing her breasts into prominence. He arched his brows and told himself to cool down. "Huh. So, what's for dinner?"
"Breaded chicken with potatoes and cold pasta salad. I found the pasta salad in the fridge."
"Ma made it." He watched as she tossed the chicken in the batter she'd mixed and set it sizzling in a frying pan on the stove.
"She takes care of you?"
"Yes, when I let her."
"Tom says the same thing. I guess mothers never stop being mothers."
"Even when their sons break their hearts," Max thought, then banished it away. Ma had forgiven him years ago. He would focus on the future, not the past.
"I saw your home gym in the living room,"
Caroline commented casually.
"It's really nice."
Max shifted in his chair, controlling the wince. "Thanks. I use it every day. Doctor's orders."
"I remember."
She closed her eyes, muttering a curse when the oil popped and blistered her skin. Max watched her stick her finger under a stream of cold water. "There's a first aid kit under the sink," he remarked. He'd picked up on her distress in the parking lot after she'd told him about being in a lot of hospitals. Now he sensed the same apprehension as she quickly applied a dab of bacterial cream to her burned finger.
"Thanks. That was careless of me."
She threw a jaunty grin over her shoulder that didn't reach her eyes.
"But don't worry, I won't sue you."
"Have a seat, Caroline." Her eyes registered surprised apprehension, but she quietly obeyed, taking up her fork, toying with the lettuce in her bowl. "I want to tell you a story." He'd made the decision in the split second he saw the fear cloud her eyes, even as she'd smiled at him. He wanted her to trust him with the truth. He could think of no better way to earn her trust than to give her the gift first. Her gaze fixed on the table.
"About a boy on a dirt bike?"
He reached out and covered her hand with his own, gently forcing the fork to clatter back into the bowl. "Yes. Look at me, Caroline." And he waited until she lifted her eyes, and again he thought of the sea. A very turbulent sea. 5 years after the dirt bike birthday, I graduated high school and went off to college on a basketball scholarship. He'd surprised her, he thought, as her eyes flickered. But she said nothing, so he continued. Played starting guard for 4 years at the University of Kentucky. He thought back to the boy he'd been, the regrets too many to count. All I ever wanted to do was play basketball. I ate, drank, and breathed it. And I was good. He stood with some difficulty and walked to the stove and turned her chicken so it wouldn't burn. I was very good and very cocky. Wishing for the cane he'd left upstairs, he moved across the kitchen, one hand on the countertop for support. "You want wine with this?" She shook her head.
"Water'll be fine."
"My father was a farmer and drove a cab at night. We were a good cab.